رفتیم اون با یعنی که
Chairperson, good morning. Good morning to colleagues. I'm present.
Welcome. Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Yaku, Chair.
Honorable Yaku.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Chair. I'm present.
Morning. Welcome.
Chair, Ms. Mwatse, Chair.
Honorable Mwatse.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Good morning. Welcome.
Chair, Mr. McPherson, Chair.
Honorable McPherson.
I'm here, thank you.
Good morning. Welcome.
Chair, Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honorable Mulder.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, colleagues, I'm present.
Good morning. Welcome. What
Chair, Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Honorable Cuthbert.
Morning, Chair, I'm present.
Good morning, welcome.
Chair, Ms. Mutawung, Chair.
Honorable Mutawung.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Good morning, welcome.
Chair, those are the only members on the platform yet. I would assume the other members will be joining us soon, Chair. Because I have not received any apologies on their behalf. So we may proceed with this.
Yeah. Maybe the first thing we can just check if ever there are any apologies. And if not, then can we fly to the agenda for today's meeting? Secretary?
We will do so, Chair. Chair, just Mr. Burns Namasi just joined the platform, Chair, as we were speaking.
Okay, Honorable Benz Namashe.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everyone. And morning. My apologies, Chair. I was just sending a message of condolence to the Vice Chancellor of Fort Hare on behalf of His Majesty the King on the heinous murder of that young student.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, we accept your apology for linking us later. Thank you very much. Secretariat, I think we will actually look at the adoption of the agenda. And I think one thing we may actually just have to have a look at the time in terms of presentation. One wanted just to have a look and check because the 9:06 to 10:30 is the presentation from SABS, and 10:30 to 11:55 is the NRCS presentation. So maybe the suggestion would be that if we can take the presentation in 50% of the time and be able to have the half of the time we have there for engaging
recording in progress,
engaging with the presentation and taking comments and questions. So maybe that's the point. Maybe Secretary will have to just advise in the presentation, because one actually had a bit of a slip, and I think it's quite an important issue. Honorable members, here's the program for today's meeting. I would really ask that if ever you can actually give an indication if we can proceed.
Chair, we have Mr. Mbuyane raise his hand as well as Mr. Simmons, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning. And Chairperson, I'm not sure in terms of the agenda, as you just alluded to, we don't have in terms of much discussion. But if you can agree that after all the presentation, you can have discussions. After the presentation has been made, you can have a discussion, then from there closing the mass. In that note, Chairperson, I'd like to propose that you adopt the agenda as it is.
Okay. So the suggestion, Honorable Mbuyane, is to say let's take both presentations and then maybe get the engagement and discussion after that. Is that the suggestion?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. Okay. No, thank you very much for that clarity. Can I check if ever there's any second for the adoption of the agenda? Honourable Hammonds?
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda as amended.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's actually then check Secretariat, because we do actually have the attendance by the Trade, Industry and Competition Department. One actually did receive that we are going to have Ms. N. Matomela, Acting Group Chief Operations Officer, will be doing the introductory remarks on the presentations. And we actually do have in the attendance of the South African Bureau of Standards, Ms. Judy Scholes, who is actually the lead administrator, and in the attendance of the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, NRCS, we do actually have Mr. E. Mamadise, who is actually the Chief Executive Officer. Let me acknowledge the teams, and I'm sure maybe before the presentation they'll be able to introduce their teams as well. So we will actually start with the South African Bureau of Standards and invite Ms. Judy Scholes to be able to actually
speak. There's only one Judy on the platform. That's Judy.
I can see now we actually, I'm creating the jealousy, Judy and Jody. Okay, sorry for that. So thank you very much. Can we? Yes,
Chairperson. Ms. Matomela will do the introductory remarks before Ms. Judy.
Yes.
Ms. Goss proceeds.
Yes. Yes. No, thank you very much. Let me actually have then Ms. Matomela to actually do the introductory remarks.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nondombi Matomela. I'm the Acting Chief Operations Officer for the DTI. Chair, we thank the Portfolio Committee for inviting us to come and present progress on the implementation of the turnaround strategies by the two entities.
Sorry, Mama Tomela.
Yes.
What we generally want, that we want to see your face before you continue, but we can go to this mode after that.
I'm trying to start the video, Chair, but I think I am disabled. I'm clicking on starting it, but it's not starting.
Oh, okay.
Andre, can you assist?
Okay.
I'll see if I can
start my video.
Siyakwamukela ke Mama Matomela. Welcome.
Can you see me now, Chair?
No, I...
I don't think we can assist from outside. We tried.
Is it?
Yeah. We tried to click on the starting of the video, but it's not working.
Okay. So is it possible then we can actually look at the assistance? We can actually then pick up on the issues, or should we wait for a few minutes, Secretariat, to connect Matomela?
Yeah, I think we should proceed because I don't think it's already on our side. Maybe it's on Ms. Matomela's side where the connectivity with the video is not possible. So I would suggest that we proceed, Chair, notwithstanding the normal request.
Okay. Ma'am Matomela will actually then maybe let's just take you from just your voice, and then we'll take the first presentation. Please proceed. Because you have started already, I disturbed you. Mama Tomela, just go ahead and then maybe on the presentation we'll take the next part. Just speak to us, we'll actually do the first presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was saying, Chairperson,
oh,
we thank the Oh, thank you, Chair. I was saying we thank the Portfolio Committee Chair for inviting us to come and present the progress in relation to the two turnaround strategies. We appreciate this session, Chair, because the sessions assist us in assisting guiding the work of the two entities. The SABS was last at the Portfolio Committee in March of 2021. And I think the NRCS was last in front of the Portfolio Committee in October, Chair. As you indicated, the SABS is being led by the two co-administrators, Ms. Jody Scholes and Dr. Tenge Dimana, and they are accompanied by the executives at the SABS. The NRCS is here today under the leadership of the CEO, Mr. Edward Mamadise, and he is accompanied by his executive team, Chair. Thank you very much.
We will invite our lead administrator, Jody Scholes, and let's actually have the presentation. Secretariat?
Chair, Mrs. Scholes will share her own presentation, Chair.
Thank you. Welcome, Mrs. Scholes. And while waiting for her, I think we actually then, secretary that didn't actually get the confirmation, we'll try and actually make sure that at least we don't get missed calls, the time taken in your presentation, but actually give a bit of time for engaging with your submission to the committee. Continue, Honorable Jody, Ms. Jody Scholes, welcome.
Good morning, Chair, and thank you very much for the welcome, and good morning to all of the honourable members and colleagues from the DGIC on the platform. Chair, I'm not alone. I'm supported by a team. I'm going to just ask that the SABS colleagues just put their videos on, and I'll start maybe with the co-administrator, Dr. Tenge Dimana, if they could just introduce themselves, and then I'll start the presentation, just so that everybody knows who's in the room. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Tenge, can I hand over to you?
Thank you, Jody. Thank you, members, for inviting us. It has already been said, I'm a co-administrator. Thank you.
Thank you, Diman.
Could I ask the SABS colleagues, maybe just in order of surname, to go first, alphabetically?
Good morning, Chair and honorable members and colleagues. My name is Kati Matemba, acting executive certification. Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to honorable members. My name is Lungelo Dubowana. I'm the acting divisional head at the CBS. Thanks.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Lizo Makele, the executive for human capital management. Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tina Miraj, and I'm the chief financial officer at the SABS.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, honorable chairperson and honorable members. My name is Sadbir Bassoon, and I'm the executive for the Standards Division.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if Tavo is on the platform, but we also have Tavo.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tavo Spuru. I'm the acting executive for laboratory services at the NCBS. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair.
Yeah.
I'm Neil Spock. I'm the group manager responsible for corporate strategy. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think that's the SABS team. I can't see the list of names, so I'm hoping that's the complete team who's on the platform. Chair, without further ado, I think to take us back to the turnaround strategy, what the intent was, then talking about the revised vision, values, strategic objectives, SWOT, and then moving into quite a bit of detail around the turnaround strategy and the implementation of that. The last time we were in the portfolio committee, we had indicated that we had an intention to start Section 189 process in terms of the Labour Relations Act. And then we'll also just give a broad organizational review update, financial update, and then also go into a bit of detail around revenue generation and operational improvements. Okay, I've got quite a lot of slides, so I'm going to flick through the slides fairly quickly. I think the business case for the turnaround strategy is well documented, and we have come to share that. But I thought just to highlight, there was a diagnostic that was done in 2018, and that diagnostic indicated that there was, you know, SABs, the relationship between SABs and the shareholder was quite adversarial. There was a deterioration in the stakeholder and the client relations, also not optimal resolution in terms of complaints and queries. At that time, SABs had also stopped what we call partial testing or customer-specific requirement testing, and then also infrastructure that had been degraded and aging. In terms of human capital and policies, quite a lot of skills being lost, people moving across the organization, being shifted from one position to another without due process. Our facilities and the weren't properly maintained, and so that was a big area of focus. And then also we had a disclaimer auditor opinion in 2018. Here, the objectives of the turnaround strategy is to return SABs to financial sustainability, to strengthen and boost the response by SABs to support government's industrial policy, ramping up customer satisfaction with our services, and then also making sure that our employees are a lot more engaged. The vision that we've, as a result of this organizational review that we started in last year, is that we want to be a trusted standardization and business assurance solution provider of choice. That has led to the introduction of a new consulting arm within SABs. We've had to make sure that in the development and conceptualization of that, we adhere to all of the impartiality rules that govern the way we work. And so I think that's a new area of business that we're hoping to ramp up and to support the revenue generation initiatives. The strategic objectives, Chair, are there, as well as our value proposition. I'm not going to go into any detail there. I think we've also just done, you know, had a very good assessment of the landscape, of the internal landscape and the external landscape, and this also dovetailed quite well with the diagnostic report that was done. I think there are a number of opportunities for us that I'll talk to in the presentation about local content, and then also the potential about expanding our service offering onto the continent and what we're doing in the scope of the AFC-FTA in particular. I think some of the threats, there's been uncertainty around COVID, and I think we've seen a number of SABs clients closing their doors, which has been very unfortunate, and we've also been seeing increased competition, not only in the domestic market, but also foreign, and so I think these are elements that are putting pressure on our activities. Chair, this was the last report in March that we had indicated. What we've done is we've finalized the business value chain assessment that we've done, and we've also completed the skills audit. The Section 189 process is part of one of the pillars of the turnaround strategy in terms of how do we contain costs. And what we've needed to do there, Chair, is we've needed to reduce the updating the employee compensation by 150 million in order for us to achieve financial sustainability. We had engagements with all affected parties, including labor, organized labor, and there was a signed agreement to offer voluntary separation packages as well as early retirement. The process attracted 123 applications. We approved 110. We've had to balance the savings versus the loss of critical skills. And to help us also manage and mitigate that, we've put in place a very robust skills transfer process and handover arrangements. And what we've done is, for some of those 110 colleagues, we've actually put in place flexible contracting working arrangements so that they are able to then manage the skills transfer to identified colleagues within the institution. While this has assisted in a large way to reduce the temperature in terms of the financial sustainability, there's still an 81 million rand gap that we need to fill. And so the Section 189 process is still underway, and the next few months until about the end of October, November, we are hoping to conclude that process, obviously looking at how we then engage all of the affected parties in options that can save that can reduce the cost of our employee bill. The organizational review, this is to engage colleagues. We've put together a new structure, and we've developed a new operating model, and there's been consultations throughout the process with all of the colleagues within the Bureau as well as with Labour. The skills audit is completed. We've also put in place a competency framework. This competency framework talks to general competencies and then also very specific SAS competencies that we have to grow and develop internally. Lots of work has been done on terms of role profiles, job profiling, which is where we're still busy, and we're also busy with a benchmark in terms of remuneration. The return to financial sustainability, Chair and Honourable Members, in the first quarter of quarter one, we recorded a profit of 6.4 million against an expected net loss of 22.2 million. This has been in part by the Certification and Training Academy exceeding their budget. We also get rental income from the CIDB, the regulator, the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, as well as the National Consumer Commission. We've been able to save about 30 million in administrative and operating costs. I must indicate that this is a bit of an artificial saving because the savings are primarily on travel costs that we would have paid. And so, you know, with the restrictions easing, we are hoping to go back to being able to travel and to service, because a lot of all the auditors have got to travel to client premises to do the actual audits. And so we'll look at that. A lot of work has gone in terms of how do we collect cash and transitioning SAS into a cash business. The DTIC has also been really helpful in providing the grant of 328.8 million, including VAT upfront, and this also just helps us in terms of our liquidity challenges. The payouts for the 189 process for the VSPs and early retirements was made in July. So this will decrease our cash reserves, but this will be offset by the savings going forward. And then in terms of the turnaround strategy, there were various options in terms of rental income that we needed to explore, and so we haven't, we've done some work, but we haven't fully initiated the development of the long-term property development strategy. Chair, this is just a view of how we've focused on cash collections to make sure that we have cash to operate. And so the Tina and the finance team have done exceptionally well in helping us to unpack this. And so lots of operational efficiencies have been made. Our monthly average for this new financial year is about 45.9 million as compared to a monthly average for last financial year of 41.1 million. And so I think, Chair, we're watching the cash and cash collections very, very closely. In terms of capital expenditure, one of the main complaints when we joined, when SAS was placed under administration, was about how do you maintain and expand your infrastructure and equipment and making relevant CapEx investments. Chair, we've spent quite a bit of money. I think the year-to-date spend as of the end of June was 15.9 million. It includes those areas within the labs. It also includes areas within the ICT space. And we've got about 49.7 million of CapEx that's in various stages of progress. COVID has impacted our CapEx spend quite significantly. Some of the equipment that we've needed to procure, they were at the port during the various stages of lockdown, and I think we're starting to see some of that moving a bit more faster now. In terms of action plans to assist us with revenue generation, we're looking at benchmarking a few of our services, lots of stakeholder engagements, and we've also included a MOU with SALDA around how can they access our standards, and there's also opportunities for us to do some capability and capacity development. In terms of revenue generation, Chair, we've looked at our clients. There's been each of us, as the EXCO team, we've been allocated X amount of clients that we need to engage with. And so the target was for 105, and we've been able to report that we've been able to engage 110 clients. The sectors that we've primarily focused on are chemicals and materials, electrotech, and food and health. We've also been able to work quite robustly in terms of our pipeline, and Lugela has been driving that area of work. And so we look at how many quotations, what is the rand value of the quotations issued versus the quotations accepted, and so the conversion rate of 45% is an area that we need to focus on very, very strongly, as well as the tenders. Our labs, they also have received a number of requests directly, and so it's about 276,000 rands worth of requests that we have. In terms of stemming the loss of customers and introducing new customers, I hope you can see my cursor. In terms of 2019, the number of lost customers was 1,749. 2020, we've been able to stem that, and as well as further in 2021, 22. And so, Chair, this is something that we're managing very actively, and we're watching this. We're also watching the number of new customers that we're growing. And I think for us, it's quite gratifying that if we look at the number of new customers to date, their book value is also increasing with us at SERVS. One of the revenue generation initiatives is the introduction of the local content scheme, Chair. This is a new scheme. It's the first scheme that we've developed since 2015. And it's aimed at supporting the localization agenda and driving competitiveness. So we'll be partnering with a number of institutions to ramp up our the implementation of this local content scheme. Just in brief, it has about 10 levels, and so it looks at any product with a local content of anything from 1 to 100%, and you get graded accordingly. And then that is the logo that we've developed to put on all of these product certificates. Okay, part of the, as we've gone throughout this turnaround strategy, one of the key areas that we've noticed is that we shouldn't only be focusing on revenue generation, but we also should be having a massive focus on revenue protection. And that talks to the operational efficiencies that we've needed to make internally. So this just gives a sense about the existing client base, the sectors that we've been involved in, and then just how we are managing this. I think there's been lots of good client feedback just about how we're engaging them and the willingness of management to listen and to see how we can assist. And then one of the strengths of SERVS that's I think been really a bedrock in terms of the turnaround strategy is the quality and the depth of skills that the auditors and the technical colleagues within the Bureau actually have. So that's something, Chair, that we really have to watch and be protecting. This is a slide just in terms of customer engagement. It gives the, on my left-hand side, it gives the various laboratory clusters, and then it also gives the level of customer engagement that we've had. This is just a sense of some of the stakeholders that we've also engaged in. So a lot of focus has been around government and municipalities, but there's also quite a bit in terms of sector associations that we have been that we've been meeting with. We've done quite a bit of collaboration with Proudly South Africa in terms of the local content verification awareness, but then also more broadly in terms of standards and the importance that standards play within the public procurement processes. And so where they are having these awareness sessions, particularly aimed at individuals within the procurement space, we've partnered with them so that we are also able to do that, because I think some of the customer feedback that we've received is that people, when they're putting out a tender, they don't understand the nuances within the standard. They would just put out a broad standard, and so there are ways in which that can be nuanced quite a lot. Chair, this is the standards development is the bedrock of our mandate, and one of the aims from the turnaround strategy is to improve the visibility and the turnaround times to develop standards. This is just a list of the standards, Chair, that support the industrialization efforts by the DTIC. Chair, one of the things I think is that I'd just like to pull out is the number 9. It's the essential oil of geranium. This is a new standard that it's the first standard of its kind in South Africa. It is a standard that talks to rose geranium oil in South Africa, which is very different to those produced in China, Madagascar, and North Africa. It looks and smells very different, and so we've been able to capture all of these nuances in this standard, and we're hoping that this is able to really support the export drive of many manufacturers. One of the other ones as well is the greenhouse gases. This just talks to industrial gas emitter covered by the standard, and so it just helps organizations in terms of how they quantify and report on greenhouse gas emissions. One of the, just moving on to some of the, apologies Chair, I've now skipped right to the end. Let me just go back, apologies. It goes here. Yes, this one also, these are published standards. For instance, the carbon dioxide, this talks to how carbon dioxide is captured and stored and transported, and this is quite an interesting one for particularly for companies involved in the climate change space. In the last financial year, we've had about 6 webinars looking at some of these standards, primarily focusing on business continuity management as a response to the pandemic to help companies manage the challenging times. And what we found, Chair, is that I think even with social media, there's a lot more queries as a result of this. I think this is an area in terms of how we promote our national standards that we are focusing on and that we really need to ramp up going forward. These are just further standards that we've published. One of the notable ones is also around fuel cell technologies, looking at performance test methods, I think there was another one around the guidelines, SANS 2059, around guidelines for consumer warranties and guarantees. This is applicable for anybody who's in the for any of the consumer bodies. How should these be embedded and put in place? Okay, this is just an extract from Business Insider about the uranium oil and the standard that we've recently just implemented. In terms of supporting harmonization of standards on the continent, the AFCFTA is quite a critical instrument. Two articles are applicable to us as the Bureau. It's Article 6, Cooperation in Standardization. And I think, yeah, it's how do we apply harmonized rules and procedures to develop and publish national standards in accordance with international requirements and best practices. So SABS has been actively supporting this through its participation in both ARSO and AFSAC to support the implementation of this agreement. In terms of conformity assessment, this just how do we promote mutual acceptance of results between conformity assessment bodies? And I'll talk to this just in terms of our action plan about the number of bilateral engagements that we've had and the role that this plays. In terms of the standard harmonization committees, ARSO, which is the African Organization for Standardization, we participate in about 35 to 40 of their technical committees. They've got about 80 of these committees. SABS has also been quite instrumental in helping allowing them to review these technical committees. And so those are just some of the key areas that we are actively participating in. One of the drivers that SABS is also interested in is wanting to introduce a new technical committee under the RSO umbrella, which the International Standards Organization and the IEC, which is the International Electrotech Commission, they've already entrenched in terms of four IRs. There's lots of opportunities on the continent to start looking at the Internet of Things, big data, and 4IR more broadly. So, Chair, I think one of the, just in terms of our contribution in terms of standards and standards development, we adopt about 60% of international standards, and we have about 40% of standards that we develop organically within South Africa. These are kind of homegrown standards. When we're also adopting these international standards, they're not just adopted blindly. They are adopted within the technical committees, so these are, you know, stakeholders who have a very good understanding of the sector. It's a multi stakeholder engagement platform that is seeks to get to a consensus in terms of what the standard should be, and that has been retrofitted, for want of a better word, to fit the South African context. So it's not just a blind adoption; it is adoption within the South African context. This is just our action plan, Chair, in terms of what are we doing to support the AFCFTA. There's stakeholder engagement. So what we're doing is we're doing mutual recognition agreements with a number of our counterparts on the continent. This is in support of an export drive for South African exporters wanting to export onto the continent. It then means for them is that if they've got the SAB certificate and they, for instance, wanted to export into Uganda, that the Ugandan standards body recognizes the SABS mark because of the mutual recognition agreement that we've got in place. So we're really trying to ramp that up as a response to the queries that we've received from our customers, and also in consultation with the DTIC. Done quite a lot of, as indicated, in terms of thought leadership and governance, the review process of the RSO membership and the technical committees, and then we also really participate very well in RSO, APSEC, and SADC-STAN. Participation in technical harmonization committees, we're reviewing that, and it's a lot more focused approach to support the AFCFTA and our industrialization agenda. Two key areas that are quite critical is the African quality policy and the Made in Africa standards. We've been able to give inputs into this with the support of the DTIC. And so the Made in Africa standard is, how do you recognize and categorize indigenous products on the continent that have been made? And so we've submitted our comments, and we're remaining engaged in that process. I think that the feedback I've received from Sadbir is that I think we're still a long way off from publishing the standard, but I think it's critically important that SAB stays engaged within that process. Chair, I'm mindful of time. I think just in terms of our operational improvements that we've made, tying it back to the turnaround strategy, we're wanting to reduce inefficiencies and turnaround times, look at implementing more systems. SAB is manual at the moment, and so how do we start automating and bringing in systems, and then also upgrading infrastructure and then maintaining our accreditation. Chair, in terms of the standards area, we've made significant improvements. We've been able to shift, I think there've been one or two hiccups in terms of the technical committee meetings, but we've been able to largely shift to moving that into a virtual space, and I think that's going quite well. These are the things that we monitor. So we, you know, currently we're standing at 85% of committees that have been convened in July, and as you can see, we actively track these to make sure. One of the areas that Sadbir has also really been driving is the number of days to publish a standard. I think you'll recall previously it used to be way over 400. We've set ourselves a target for this year of 370, which is aligned to international standards and norms. However, we're currently standing in July at 308, and this is primarily because we're really and actively driving this. One of the areas, Chair, that we've also signed on to the UNECE's Declaration of Gender Responsive Standards and Standards Development, we've developed an action plan, and this looks at our technical committees And we've also set ourselves a target for women in leadership within the South African Bureau of Standards. We've had a very great engagement with women in plumbing in last month, and one of the things that they've indicated to us is that, you know, and they've sent us a battery of standards relevant to the plumbing sector, that when we're referring to a plumber, we use the gender he. And so these are some of the areas in which we are looking at to respond, not only from a standard base, but also who's sitting in the room, and making sure that there's as much diversity in that space as possible. I'm going to move on to ICT. This is just a slide in terms of where we are with the implementation of various systems. So we're looking at developing. We've developed the SAP certification system. It's about 70% complete. And we're looking then at ramping up also the LIMS, which is the Laboratory Information Management System. Identified about 17 priority labs to roll out LIMS 2, and that process is ongoing. Moving our standard sales onto an e-commerce platform so that individuals don't have to come in and buy physical standards. We're also busy developing that platform, and that's about 50% complete. Chair, an organization-wide ERP is what we're doing and wanting to implement, particularly for finance, our customer relationship management side of things, HR and supply chain, and so we're busy preparing the RFP. We've had a number of vendors come in and show and tell, do a show and tell for us, and this is, and so now we've got a really good idea of what it is that we want, and we're busy putting that to paper. Chair, I'm going to move on in terms of HC. I'm not going to touch on this because I've touched on this before. I think just one of the key points here is that we've initiated an org culture change program. How, you know, looking at primarily at performance management and customer service, but also how do we start changing behaviors internally. One of the areas that we've done, Chair, is we've introduced a youth development program, and we've employed about 20 graduates. This has been in response to an advert process that we've initiated, and people have then applied to be part of this program. Given that we're needing to shift the dial and make, you know, sustainable and changes within the Bureau, we've started a number of programs aimed at building capacity and building skills. So we've done something that we call the leadership circle. We've looked at the current leadership capability. And so in the weekly turnaround meetings, what we do there is we focus not only on organizational performance, but we also try and drill it down to individual performance. So for instance, what have you done on a personal level this week to achieve results? Because each week we then have a focus coming out of these competencies that we're wanting to improve on. On Friday, Chair, we're launching a Women in Leadership program. This is aimed at the women managers within the, or women within the Bureau. And so I think there's been quite a lot of excitement in this space. And then we've also done some coaching in addition to other skills development about conflict management, staff development, motivation, and discipline. Chair, quite a big focus on performance management, and then making sure that we have a conducive employee relations environment by implementing the recognition agreements, and then also making sure that we have regular engagements with labour. Chair, in terms of facilities, I'm not going to talk to this, but I think there's been a lot of work that we've done in terms of making sure that we comply, our facilities comply legally, but that also our areas are fit for purpose. So I'm not going to go into this, but I think Tina and the facilities team have really done exceptionally well just in terms of upgrading many of the facilities. There's still quite a bit to do, and so one of the areas that we've also focused on is a partnership with the National Clean Production Center around not only energy management for South Africa, but also for the campus. And so we've submitted, I think, an infrastructure bid to the National Treasury as part of the MTEF process to look at solar panels on and trying to make sure that in the medium to long term, we cut down our energy costs. The accreditation area is quite important. They are the oversight in terms of our license to operate. Some of the challenges that we've had in this space is we've had a SANUS audit. They've identified 60 non-conformances. These are, and one of the big areas for improvement is our record keeping. So, you know, they would say that records, you know, are not, they weren't uploaded timely into SharePoint, and so that is a big focus just in terms of where we are. What we also have been focusing on is transitioning various schemes into the upgraded levels, and so it's the FSSC 5.0. We need to transition all of our clients to version 5.1, and so on. And so I think this is an area that we also actively track and manage on a weekly basis. Last, there's been quite a lot of work that we've been doing in terms of looking not only at the turnaround times, but also at the hardware and the software that supports that. And there was a big internal assessment that we've done, and so we now know the and we have a plan for the replacement not only of hardware but also of software within the lab space. One of the big areas I think in the lab environment is going forward, and that we've already started but we really need to ramp that up, is around multi-skilling. How do you, you know, some individuals have competence that could be used in other areas, and so how do we start that whole process of cross-pollination? Chair, I'm not going to go around this, but I think the improvements have been a big focus around the profitability of labs, and so we look at these labs per cluster area. What does it cost us to produce a service versus what we're charging versus what our competitors are charging, and then how do we ramp that up? And so there's also been quite extensive work around planning and a forecasting tool, and a big focus in the labs around profitability and productivity of individuals. In the certification space, I've spoken about the local content initiative. Also about collaboration with the collaboration that we've done externally in terms of standards bodies on the continent to support our local manufacturers. Put in also a new model, a new operating model in certification to help us drive centralization a lot sharper, and we also have introduced client managers in this space. We need to make sure that our license to operate in terms of the accreditation, external accreditation from SANUS and from RBA are on point. And what we've also done is we've put in place around any expired permits, and we're really making significant strides in that space. We're not quite there yet. I think there's still quite a bit of work that the team and the team are engaged in, and we're needing to start seeing how we start changing those, the trajectory of some of those KPIs. Okay, just in terms of the way forward, what I'd like to just focus on is the priorities. So we're needing to, as part key to the turnaround strategy, is finalizing the 189 process, the org review process, and then also the population of the new structure. It's also in terms of the financial health and sustainability of SABS, is looking at cost savings and looking at the fixed costs and see how we can address those. Look at revenue protection, revenue generation, and then also launch the local content scheme, and that we also then ensure that SABS is taken out of administration. So, Chair, apologies, I think I've gone about a couple of minutes over, but that's the presentation that I would like to make. So thank you, Chair.
Let's welcome the presentation, and thank you very much for the, it's been very informative submission. Let's actually then move on to the next submission, but for this stage, I think we will then actually get the discussion after the second presentation. Can I invite the next presentation? Secretariat, I'm sure you were able to link them up.
Okay, that's correct, Mr. Mamadisi will share his document.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Mamadisi and your team.
Thank you, Chair.
not sure if the presentation is visible.
I can see it from where I'm looking. Yeah, now I think it's even on the proper size.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the projection is covered. I'm sure it's actually then possible to take the presentation. Thank you, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I think I must state up front that, Chair, I'm experiencing severe symptoms or side effects of vaccine. And for that reason, Chair, I would adopt a slightly different approach in terms of the presentation, wherein I will allow the colleagues to come in and do some of the slides, if that is in order with you, Chair.
Yeah. No, I think we will greatly welcome that. And I think as a nation, we know the fight against COVID-19 is on. And for your part with the side effects, thank you for being able to make time. And I think we'll accept that you will use your team as well to help with the presentation. But welcome, and thank you very much. And I think for all of us, it's a very important matter. Welcome, CEO.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity, Chair. Let me start then with the introduction of the team. I think I'm not alone, Chair. I'm with the Chief Operating Officer, Mrs. Abigail Tulare, the Chief Information Officer, Rebecca Ramcharan, Manager Strategy and Risk, Edward Matemba, our Chief Information Officer, Oba Khasego. I think it is his maiden portfolio committee meeting. Welcome to him, Chair. Then in terms of the presentation, I will move quickly to the issues that led us to be here, Chair, in the first place. The NRCS experienced quite some challenges within the internal control environment, also in terms of system issues that have not been attended to. One of the key challenges that have been identified during the diagnostic review is that there were key vacant positions in senior management. The organization received a qualified audit opinion from the Auditor General in respect of the completeness and cutoff of revenue and also on employee post-retirement benefit. There was also an issue of backlog in terms of the issuance of pre-market approvals, commonly known as the LOAs. Lastly, Chair, one of the issues was the delay in the implementation of the modernization project. So we have confined our presentation to respond to these challenges and how we have addressed them as the NRCS. Starting with the challenge in terms of the human resource capital, the critical vacancies that were there, we have managed to fill almost all the key senior management position, including the position of the CFO, the supply chain manager, the financial manager, the senior manager, human capital, as well as the chief information officer. The only critical position that we have not yet filled due to the need to perform a job evaluation on that position is the GM Legal Metrology. We are hoping to advertise this position by the end of September. We have also implemented the organizational review project. We have finalized the structure. The only thing that is still outstanding is the job evaluation. We are hoping to commence that process by end of August 2021 to ensure that the structure is properly costed and is affordable. So one of the legislative imperatives is that the minister must approve the conditions of services of all the employees within the organization. Hence, there is a need to finalize the job evaluation before we can submit a costed structure to the minister to be able to make an informed decision. Still on the org review, Chair, one of the intervention that we have done in the last financial year was to review the current structure that we are working on and ensure that all the positions that are there have been properly budgeted for, and we have also identified some of those positions as key positions that need to be filled urgently to enable us to deliver on the mandate while still embarking on the organizational review. In terms of the outdated policies, we have developed a policy framework within the organization that will inform how the policies get developed and what process should they follow until approval and implementation thereof. A part of the key structure that is responsible for policy development is the Policy Review Committee, which comprises of the representatives from organized labor, management and executives and external members of who have been seconded from the HR committee to deal specifically with policies that have labor implications. We have also we are also in the process of reviewing some of the human resource policies, and these policies will serve at these structures that I've referred to earlier on. Chair, one of the areas of qualification that we had in 2019-20 was the qualification on the post-retirement benefit. We have resolved that part of the qualification, and we don't anticipate that it will occur in the current financial year. Still on the human resource, as part of the ICT modernization project, I think the CIO will talk more about that. We have, for the first time since the establishment of the NRCS, we have in-source for the NRCS, which covers leave management and payroll matters for the organization. If you may recall, Chair, the last time when we appeared before you, we were still using SABS to assist us in this area. But since June 2021, we have successfully implemented our own Sage 300 system to assist in human capital management area. Chair, as I've said, with your permission, I would ask the CFO to come.
That's in order. CFO. CFO.
Thanks, CEO, and morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and also fellow colleagues. Okay, with regards to our 2021 audit, this slide was prepared before we had our audit report. We did receive our draft audit report yesterday, and there has been noticeable improvement. Although the NRC has still received a qualification, the qualification is now limited to an amount of $4.3 million, which is limited to one area, compared to all the previous years where the NRCS was qualified on the entire balance. Last year, the qualification sat at $253 million. So there has been quite a noticeable improvement on the qualification. If we go on to the next slide. CEO, if we could just please go on to the next slide. Thank you. Okay, so this is the process that was undertaken to resolve the revenue qualification. You will see that this process is technical and it also has some operational matches as well. The biggest challenge that the NRCS has is that it has, one of the biggest challenges that the NRCS has is that it has a very small window period to estimate levies. Since the declarations are due at the end of April and AFS has to be submitted by the end of May. So we now have implemented a cutoff up until the 20th of May where we will look at the actual declaration submitted. And this has to be taken into account and this was not part of the current qualification. In terms of the levy estimates, in the previous year we have engaged with National Treasury, the Auditor General's Office, and we had a service provider on board to assist and guide us in finalizing the way forward and to help us get rid of this qualification. We have drafted an estimation methodology which is being implemented currently by the NRCS. And so in this estimation methodology, we have implemented various processes to look at our estimates and make sure it's complete and accurate. New customers not taken into account. This was also removed from the qualification this year since we have embarked on a process internally where we ensure that all customers that have been inspected are taken into account into our levy estimation. Revenue completeness and cutoff, this is ongoing. The team is doing this almost on a monthly basis where we look at all customers that need to be removed. Also internally, the team of general managers also come back and give feedback on companies inspected that need to be marked inactive or removed from the database. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will then hand over to our COO, Abigail Tulari, who will take us to the next slide. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. I will take you through the status in terms of our pre-market approvals. Which is the status following our meeting in February, but also touching on the period that we embarked on this turnaround plan, specifically on pre-market approvals, since the latter part of 2018-19 financial year, and also the better part of 2019-20. Currently, it is important we are pleased to report to the committee that NRCS has resolved the backlog, which was one of the challenges that we've experienced as an organization, and through the turnaround, we are seeing a positive result. Currently, there are no applications that have not been evaluated. However, applications that are not finalized within the 120 days are mainly due to the delays in the time of a resolution of those outstanding findings that we normally would issue the industry to respond to. And sometimes, or in some instances, you'll find that the industry submit applications without all the required documentation or even unacceptable test reports. So these are some of the challenges that if you see the status that we have of applications over and above 120 days are mainly due to these reasons. And as indicated, in the past 18 months, we managed to achieve a performance performance of 92%, and if committee members can remember, in the 18-19 financial year, we're sitting around about 79%, and we are also pleased to report that the performance in terms of the LOAs or pre-market approvals is slightly higher than the previous financial year, which was 2019-20 by 1%. And also it is important to mention that in terms of the industries or the business units that regulate the industries under the scope of the NRCS, approximately 94% of this of the total number of applications processed within 120 days, those come from the electrotechnical as well as the automotive business units, and 2% from the chemical, materials and mechanical unit, and from the measuring instruments. It is also important to mention to the committee that as in the NRCS, we have seen a reduction in the number of applications received since the COVID-19, even though those figures are improving. Next slide, please. This slide talks to the fact that we have 100%, almost 100% of approvals within gaming and type approvals within our unit, legal metrology, as well as the approvals within the automotive unit that have been finalized within 120 days. And remember, if you remember as well, in our last presentation to this committee, the performance of these three units were previously reported to be just under 99%. So this indeed is a notable progress that we would want to report to the committee. The next slide, please. In terms of this slide is a depiction to show that over and above the significant improvement in the turnaround time for the processing of the pre-market approvals, there has been evidence based on our full implementation of the risk-based approach that in actual fact it is taking us far much less time to process the pre-market approvals. So this slide, in terms of this graphical depiction, shows that improvement. And this has precisely because of the fact that we normally categorize our applications in terms of high risk, medium and low risk, and obviously the low risk taking less time to process, as well as the high risk taking slightly a longer time, but we try to make sure that we process within the 120 days. And with this evidence, we have shown that, or rather we are seeing that the majority of the applications are processed actually between 30 days and 60 days. And I think it begs that question that was asked the last time to say, have we thought of any efforts at the NRCS to improve further the 120 days? But with this trend, it's a trend that we are beginning to see in other business units, but we have embarked on an actual formal process of reviewing our LOA policy processes and procedures at the NRCS, just to confirm this trend that we are seeing in informing further the further improvements that we need to make at the NRCS. The next slide, please. So this slide is just to show, you know, the improvement within the electrotechnical unit. The previous slide I mentioned that this unit together with the automotive account to the value of 94% of the total number of applications that we process within 120 days. So over and above the turnaround time for processing the pre-market approvals, as a performance indicator that we're closely monitoring as the NRCS, we also monitor applications on hand. And on average, this unit, the electrotechnical unit, receives a total of 2,700 applications per month. So you can imagine the volume that this unit is processing per month. However, we have seen a significant improvement in the applications on hand. When we look at the trend in the 2017-18 financial year to now, we had an average of 4,586 applications on hand. However, as of the 30th of June, we are sitting with only 799 applications, which is a significant improvement considering the average time it took us previously. And of those applications that are on hand, there is no application application that is not assigned to either an assessor or evaluator or an approver. However, 490 of those are awaiting corrective action. 309 are awaiting to be captured and to be issued with an LOA. And I think this ties with that issue that I've mentioned, that sometimes the challenge that we are facing is that a constraint is actually in the market rather than internally, where applications, when they are submitted, they are not submitted with the correct documents and so forth. But however, through our continuous commitment and review in terms of our operating environment, we are making those changes. This next slide, which is a depiction of the downward trend in terms of the applications on hand, I won't spend much time on it. Can I then move to the next slide, which is now pre-market approvals within our CMM unit, which is the Chemicals, Materials, and Mechanicals unit. This unit processes applications for PPE and chemical disinfectants, which we regard as essential products, and it contributes to only 2% of the number of total applications, as I've indicated when I spoke about the breakdown in terms of which units contribute how much in terms of the total LOAs that are processed within 120 days. To continue supporting government efforts, this unit is, in fighting the pandemic, the NLCS has implemented measures to facilitate the process to assist manufacturers and importers to bring products quicker to market, you know, so that we don't have a barrier to trade in terms of these industries that we are assisting, specifically the chemical disinfectants rather industry. And example that one can make is that some of the applications were processed applying the sales permit process, which is in line with the NLCS Act, read together with the regulations, and others were obviously following the normal LOA process. And as a result, in terms of supporting this industry, we have seen a reduction in the average turnaround time to under 30 days of these products. And also, maybe it's important to mention that in terms of CMM, applications that are beyond 120 days are mainly within the two sectors or subsectors that this unit is responsible for, which is the area of safety and foodware and the very same chemical disinfectants. But with chemical disinfectants, it's precisely because of the new requirements of BC 8054, where industry is expected to register the new products that they are planning to sell to the market. As they always say, that, you know, you can never have a balanced system or operation system. So as a result, because of the fact that you can never have a balanced system, sometimes the constraint moves within the system. And in this instance, it has moved within the market, because in terms of this very same subsectors, we are seeing, you know, applications that are trickling in. As a result, we have extended the time that we have given the industry to register these products. And also, we have a dedicated email specifically for the safety and foodware industry, where there's questions in terms of what needs to be submitted, the type of test reports, in terms of the different styles that they normally would submit to us in terms of safety footwear. And that is referred through our internal referral system for advice, so as to fast-track some of these outstanding queries or findings that the industry needs to deal with. And also, we are currently reorganizing the back office and the front office to assist as well in terms of the two sub-industries or sub-sectors that I spoke to, where we have a dedicated team of administrators. At the moment is two, where the purpose is to make sure that the applications, as they come in, they are reviewed immediately and checked for administrative compliance. And if they don't, then they need to be returned, and the industry or the applicant rather needs to be informed. So these are some of the interventions to assist this subsector in terms of the challenges that are raised and mentioned in terms of the safety footwear and also chemical disinfectants. And I think lastly, in terms of this slide, I just want to highlight that we are planning as well to pilot some of the bulk communication as well, so that when an application doesn't meet an administrative compliance as per our requirements in terms of our guidelines and standard operating procedures, then the applicant is informed immediately so as they can deal with the finding in terms of what needs to be submitted. I think this is the last slide. The next slide in terms of the pre-market approvals. As earlier alluded, there has been various measures which I've tried to also touch on in the previous slide that the NRCS had put in place to eliminate the backlog that we've had or we've previously had challenges with. However, it is also important to mention or to report to the committee that we have fully implemented a new energy efficiency database since March 2021 over and above the RBA or risk-based approach, and also increasing capacity as well as making sure that we closely adhere to our 30 days cancellation period. And what we have seen with the implementation of this database on specifically all energy efficiency related electrotechnical products, we have seen a reduction in the overall turnaround time in the processing of these type of products within the electrotechnical sector. And I just want to mention that through a commitment and engagement with our industries that we are regulating as the NRCS to understand our operating environment so that we are able to, you know, improve on those efficiencies and effectiveness. It is important to say that we are continuously engaging and getting that feedback in terms of how best to improve our environment. Thank you so much. Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, CEO. I'm sure we can proceed. Thanks to Tulare.
I think it's the CIO, just to finalize. CIO.
CEO, good morning, Chair, and good morning to all the members. I will be taking you through the ICT turnaround strategy and giving an update as to where we are in terms of the modernization, as well as enhancing the controls and the process within the ICT government environment. So from ICT perspective, we have a number of what we categorized our initiatives in about, say, five or six categories between infrastructure applications, governance, as well as policies and processes. I will start with the first one on terms of application stabilization and modernization program. And the justification for this initiative's members was that the current JDE system that NRCS works on needed to be upgraded and to be stabilized, and also it had quite a number of findings which were painting a different picture about the organization. Therefore, an ERP solution was implemented, a decision was taken to implement an ERP solution which is stage 300. And the implementation of this system is currently towards to its conclusion. As the CEO has indicated, we've already went live with the HCM module in relation to payroll in June, and the balance of these modules, the finance, HCM, other areas as well as facilities, will be going live by the end of September, going to October. And we are pleased that the progress so far is good in relation to this implementation, and also the change management is driven as part of the implementation for this system. I think members can also, will ask what about the regulatory system, and we'll move into some of the slides in this presentation. We'll talk through that and give an update as to where we are with that with the implementation. Because ideally, the implementation of an ERP system should include your functions as well as your core processes. Next slide, CEO. Now, one of the initiatives that we had to undertake was to review our infrastructure and make sure that we have a platform through which this modernization program
run the applications in a way that is adequate, efficient, and effective to drive the organizational strategy. We had to look at the infrastructure, the voice over IP telephone system, and the bandwidth. And the prioritization was to provide broadband access to employees, as we all know that currently we are working remotely. Therefore, it was deemed important to ensure that users had access to the services and also be able to work regardless of the locations with the dependency of the services provided by the broadband service providers. Parallelly, we also looked at the scope of work for the network infrastructure, including all the regions. And therefore, that scope has been finalized and will be issuing a tender in the next month to look at a fit-for-purpose solution that will help us to ensure that the implementation of this system, SAGE, as well as the central system, will be operated on a network that is fast and efficient enough to enable users to operate and also to enable us to serve our customers. Next slide, CEO. Thanks. Now, members will understand that information or data security is very critical. Therefore, we had another initiative to ensure the integrity of the data as well as security, and to ensure that we have a fit for purpose or adequate security systems. We had to look at ensuring that we bring in a strategy that will ensure secured environment, avoid vulnerabilities, enable unauthorized access to NRCS systems. The initiative there was to look at the strategy that will be in line with the business requirements and also the trends within the ICT environment, and also looking at what are the current challenges that are faced within the ICT environment from a security perspective. Members will note that since the arrival of COVID-19, there's been a report of number of cybersecurity incidents that number of companies have suffered due to vulnerabilities which needed to be addressed. And to ensure that NRCS is not also a victim of such, we had a report from Gartner that advised us or guided us in terms of what is our security posture, so that we can come up with an adequate response that will enable us to ensure that the environment is not prone or vulnerable to any attack that could come to the detriment of the systems or the environment. Therefore, we defined a high-level scope with the consideration of the Gartner's recommendation that will help us to have what we deemed a security as a service, security as a service approach that will ensure that we cover real-time security monitoring and also on the endpoint systems, and also in help us with vulnerability management remediation and incident response, such that should there be anything happening in the environment from a security perspective, that we will be geared or will be ready enough to respond and make sure that the environment is not compromised. Next slide, CEO. Thank you. Now, the next point, as I indicated, with regards to the regulatory system, we had to make sure that as an organization, we have an adequate or a right system that will help us to address all the challenges that have been highlighted by the industry, but at the same time bringing in efficiencies and optimization of our processes such that we put NRCS in a position that is adequate enough to respond to any or to be agile enough to market dynamics. In so doing, we had to ensure that we look at the organization's end-to-end processes as well as the functional requirements between the BUs, which are different within the organization, as well as their integration requirements to the functions, including finance, and particularly looking at our revenue management and revenue collection processes, which are linked to the operations and the finance environment. At the same time, we had to make sure that we bring in or we look at the different solutions that we have internally to check if we cannot deliver some of them to drive this modernization in a modular approach. But to cut the story short and without taking too much time, members, where we are now is that we are working on concluding the to-be processes for the organization in response to the challenges that we have, as well as the end-to-end functional and non-functional requirements, which will lead us to have a tender issued by the end of this year, where we'll be looking at a fit-for-purpose central regulatory system for all the BUs and with the need to ensure integration to all the functional areas as indicated. And this will help us to ensure that we do not leave any BU behind, or we do not leave any market that we are regulating behind in terms of the challenges that they have, and in terms of making sure that we give them that seamless customer experience in terms of the processes of the LOAs, as well as the processes of getting the visas and so forth through the customer portal that will drive efficiencies and also ensure that our turnaround time in terms of responding to customers is reduced, and also that the market doesn't suffer as a result of perhaps a lack of or a substandard delivery from NRCS. Thank you, CEO. Next slide. Then the last point, as members will understand, that ICT needs to be well governed precisely because of the need to ensure adequate controls are there, and also that you drive the implementation of a strategy that is linked to the organization. So we need to review and implement a coherent, pragmatic ICT governance program. Thereby, the justification for that also is that we needed to ensure that we are flexible and quick enough to respond to business, or to respond with business solutions that meet the requirements. We're currently looking at our process, our policies, to ensure that all the gaps are closed, and we're also looking at our governance model to ensure that we are agile enough to respond to any customer or market dynamics. 40% of our policies have been reviewed, and by the end of November, we are confident that we would have achieved 100%. Thank you, Chair. Next slide. As the CEO indicated, that one of the challenges that we've had within the organization is capacities, resources, and competencies. We had to embark on a process to get capacity that will help us to drive this modernization, to ensure that we have fit-for-purpose structures, skilled and competencies, as it is known that the ICT is quite a specialized sector, but to ensure that we also do not rush this modernization with limited capacity and end up having a system that does not meet the requirement. At this stage, we have a panel of resources companies which are assisting with the capacities such as project management, testing, functional analysis, to make sure that the program does not get delayed while the focus is on the ERP system implementation. Therefore, we are currently working with the resources companies to help us with definition of the requirements while we are driving the conclusion of the ERP system and ensure in seamless adoption and integration of the system into the business. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, CEO.
Welcome, Ndate Okwa Kasaho, in our first attendance to our meeting. As CEO, I'm sure you can be able to round up.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just conclude by these two last slides. I think we just also wanted to highlight the impact of COVID-19 on the organizational performance and operational performance. One of the key areas that has been affected is the revenue, because most of the companies that are registered with us and paying levies have not been able to survive the harsh impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, and they have closed business, which then means that we are equally affected in terms of the revenue collection. The COO has also touched on this. During especially level 4 and level 5, we have seen a huge reduction in terms of the number of applications for LOAs, mainly due to the fact that most of the companies were not operational, or there was limited economic activity during those levels.
and we were also impacted in terms of the ability to conduct market surveillance activities where there has been low economic activity happening during level 4 and 5. And with the introduction of the remote working phenomenon, obviously some of the employees, due to the nature of their work, they were not able to be fully productive during those hard levels of lockdown. And lastly, as the CIO has also indicated, we have leveraged on the ICT system, utilizing virtual platforms to enable us to continue with our business. We have reprioritized the budget so that we can allocate the resources where they are needed, especially on the ICT, expanding on the data requirements for our employees, the purchasing of new laptops for employees who would normally not have laptops, and so forth. And over and above that, we've been able to support the key industries that have been impacted by COVID, especially in the food and associated industry, where we have came up with an intervention to be able to release containers within 10 days. We apply the same method in all other areas of our business. What is key, Chair, due to the recent unrest, especially in KZN and Gauteng, we, as the NRCS, we have looked at the ways on how we can assist the businesses that have been affected by the looting and so forth, so that they can be able to replenish their stock and be able to continue with their business activities. One of the interventions that we have came up with is to extend the validity period of the LOAs that have expired between 1 July 2021 and August, end of August 2021, for a period of 3 months, just to enable business to continue production and be able to import the necessary stocks to continue business. Chair, I think that will be the end of our presentation, but I think what I would want to emphasize to the committee is that there is a steady improvement in many of the areas where we were found wanting, especially in terms of the human capital, the audit environment. And we hope, Chair, that by the end of this financial year, we will be able to completely get out of this revenue qualification. I thank you, Chair.
I think we can, thank you very much, CEO, be able to actually go back to members and actually welcome the comments, questions for clarity or from the portfolio committee members. Can I invite the honorable members to just pick up on engaging on the submissions that we have received? Good morning, honorable members. Floor is yours.
Chair, may I just request that the CEO stop sharing his presentation, Chair?
Oh, okay. CEO?
Chair, we have Mr. Kring at the moment, Chair, as the only hand.
Okay. Honorable Kring.
Mr. Mbuyane, Chair.
And Honorable Mbuyane.
At the moment.
Thank you.
Chair, if we could just go to Mr. Mbuyane.
I'm just having a technical issue here with opening my phone to get my questions that I've written down, so I don't want to just speak from the top of my head at the moment.
Okay.
I'm good to go, Chair.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay, I'm good to go. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, with regards to SAPS, thank you for the insightful presentation. And we appreciate it. Certainly sounds like an honest presentation as well. But my first question would be, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the success of the turnaround strategy? So with 10 being most successful and 1 being least successful, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the turnaround strategy? Secondly, I'm just interested in that aspect you spoke of capturing some businesses in terms of the greening of the economy. Looking at capturing CEO, because there's obviously a fine balance between taking CO2 out of the atmosphere. Because if you obviously take too much CO2 out of the atmosphere, we're going to have our trees and that's done, because trees survive on CO2. And then thirdly, you mentioned the working on improvements, that SABS is working on improvements with respect to expired permits. Could you just unpack this? How are you actually working on those improvements with regards to expired permits? Then, Chair, my questions also to the NRCS is noting that you've received this qualified audit. Have there not been sufficient internal audit measures in place to prevent the qualified audit, particularly in terms of the financial streaming sector? Secondly, so the first question has to do with our internal audit capacity of NRCS. The second is with regards to the LOAs. What is the international benchmark with regards to applications above or below 120 days? So is 120 days the benchmark figure, or is it more than that or less than that? And then final question, Chair, is with regards to the modernization, particularly with ICT. Is the program that is now currently being implemented or used or phased in locally or internationally developed? And what are the terms and conditions of its use, including financial commitments? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. Chair, let me first welcome both the presentation. I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. One is the NRCS. How sustainable is the new organizational structure, which was endorsed on the 31st of March? Are there any allegations of fraud and corruption in the process? Secondly, how is the collaboration with other entities and departments? The other one is the SABS, the impact of ESCOM disruption. Just want to check what is the impact on SABS, the disruptions, load shedding, and also financial stability and cost cutting. The last one, Chair, around the NRCS. NRCS has resolved the backlog challenge. Can we be taken into confidence as to how they dealt with the matter of the backlog, Chairperson? Thank you for the opportunity.
Chair, we have Ms. Yaku, followed by Mr. Bills Mamashi, Chair.
Honorable Yaku.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If you don't mind, I just can't put my video on right now. I think I would like to firstly commend the SABS on the amazing presentation that they did for us. We know how far they have come in terms of bringing order back to the entity. So it's quite refreshing to actually have a comprehensive report such as we received today. I just do want to make a comment on the one aspect where they say their target is 30% women employment, and I really think that at a time like this, there's no way any organization could aim for 30% when minimum should be 50% of employment for women, and prioritizing that. With regards to NRCS, you know, this organization really worries me because there is an element of defeat, you know, and an element of, I don't know, you know, we can't be, we should have just aim for a clean audit, you know, never a qualified audit at all. And I think Honorable Mbuyane covered me with regards to the backlog part of it. But I think I am rather concerned, and I think we should go back as a committee to prioritizing oversight over NRCS just to bring it back in whatever way we can to assist, bring it back to order. Thank you, Chair.
Secretariat, or we actually at, what was the next hand?
Hey, Mr. Burns Namasha, Chair.
Honorable Burns Namasha.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, Chair, my first take would be to SAPS. And really, in line with the speakers who have welcome their report, which was quite comprehensive and covered a whole range of areas. I'm particularly more encouraged by their focus on the AFCFTA, you know, the Africa Continental Trade Agreement. You see, Chair, this continent has been a subject of subjugation and exploitation, especially by European countries and the West. And it is time that Africa stand on its own in terms of its own organic commodities, and also encourage intra-continental trade, so that there's a strong wealth circulation within the continent. Africa, Honorable Chair, does not really need aid from any other continent, given the quantum of resources that this continent is equipped with. Whether you go to mineral resources, natural resources, afforestation, water, and everything, this continent, quite honestly, I can safely say, is the richest continent, yet is the poorest in terms of its human population. And that then, surely there's something wrong. There's something wrong. Now, I think the kind of standards that we use in determining that which must ultimately find expression in the markets, largely those standards are imposed to our continent. So which means we also have to invest in the development of human capital in ways that will assist
in our own organic intelligentsia to develop our own uniquely African standards, which are globally competitive, so as to ensure that through those standards, we are able to place this continent at a pedestal where it is competitive to the global players. So I would be interested in the focus of SAPS when it comes to those areas. Yes, it's well and good to deal with the domestic and or local organizational matters, but it's important that SAPS begins to position itself as an important torch bearer, which could be used as a model by the entire continent in ways that, of course, may not may not really show the that kind of condescending posture when we deal with other sister countries within the continent, but also we make sure that we up the game in ways that set a globally competitive standard, but that which is organically and uniquely African in its orientation and character, of course. Then the second part, Chair, would be to the regulator. Because, unfortunately, the regulator, it really the nerve of their functionality, among other things. It talks to the specification. So you can see that a symbiotic relationship between the two entities, where you can even bring in the Competition Commission. Now, you see, what they are dealing with is very critical, very, very, very important. However, my concern is, yes, we can discuss these issues here at portfolio committee level, discuss these issues at boardrooms. But I'm just wondering, a person who is directly affected by their operations, who is sitting there in Mpumalanga, Kamhlushwa, Mzindi, Eskumansdal, you know, a person who is there, KwaNongoma, KwaMhlabuyalinga, a person who is there, Elusikisiki, Mhoji, you know, eKamdobowa, Eastern Cape, Jalonja, those people who are there, who are affected by this, how do they get this valuable and important information? What measures are in place to disseminate this important information so that ultimately it finds meaning, it finds expression in the lives and livelihoods of those people, especially those who are in the deep rural areas, who, by the way, are significantly affected by the operations of these important institutions. I'm raising this, Chair, knowing very well that, for instance, in those rural areas, there's no area in South Africa where you don't find what as institutions, what committees and what councillors. There are no areas in South Africa where there are rural areas that may not. Now, how do we bring in those strategic institutions as our partners in ensuring that we disseminate this information? Traditional councils, what committees, what councillors, and so on, so as to make sure that our outreach is more effective, efficient, impactful, and it really makes sense to those people that are ultimately at the receiving end. Thank you very much, sir.
Secretary, I'm not sure if there are still other members.
No hands, chair. Chair, we can proceed.
So there are no hands.
No hands, chair.
Okay, maybe we can actually go back to the two entities in the same order of SABS and then NRCS in that order. Can I ask Jody?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you to all of the Honourable Members for the question. Honourable Sting, I think in response to your question, how do we rate the success of the turnaround strategy? I'd give it a 7 because I think in terms of our revenue generation activities, these have been impacted quite significantly by COVID, but I think we can do a lot more. We've also identified a number of new sectors that we'd like to play in, and so plans are in place for us to start getting the capacity. But building the technical capacity takes anything between 6 to 12 months to build the people capacity as well as bring in equipment. So in terms of equipment, sometimes we are challenged. There's only one single source service provider, and we have to follow the PFMA, and so that just imposes some constraints, but we manage those. So I'd give it a 7. I think we've started the section 189. I think there's some hard and difficult conversations that lie ahead, and we will engage in those, I think, in the spirit of building SABS and making sure that SABS is financially sustainable. I think in terms of the greenhouse gas emissions, I'm going to ask Sadbir and Nils maybe to respond to those, but I'm aware that there's a draft nationally determined contribution, which is the bedrock of South Africa's climate change response, is out for public comment, but perhaps Nils and Sadbir can assist in that space. In terms of expired permits, Honourable Sting, this is an own goal, and I must be honest with that. And it's an own goal in terms of SABS not being as robust as it should be in its planning. So what we've done is there's weekly planning meetings now to look at, so expired permits happen when we don't do the audit in terms of the rules in 6 months before the permit expires. And so we've got a system, even I get those notifications now about when permits are likely to expire within 120 days and there are various time frames for that. So it's strengthening the planning, it's strengthening the capabilities of the team. I think the lack of a system is a constraint, and we're working on that in terms of the certification system that's 70% complete. So that would give us greater transparency and allow us to plan these audits electronically rather than the current Excel processes that we're currently using. But I don't know, Katima, if you want to add anything in that. I think then in terms of the Honourable Mbuyani, your question about disruptions in the load shedding, what we're finding is it's more cable theft, and so there have been engagements. Whenever there's anything, the ward councillor and the city of Tshwane, we've been engaging with them quite robustly on this. But it's not just a matter of cables being stolen. So what happens typically on a Friday night or Saturday morning at 2 o'clock, Tina will get an SMS saying the cables have been stolen, there's no power at the campus. And what this then means is we've got a switch, so that effectively the plant room, which is the engine for all of the labs, is shut down. And it takes, I think, about 3 to 5 days. Tina, you can come in and correct me, for us to restart that plant room. And so any tests, and we do a number of tests that are dependent on energy in the labs, we've got to restart those tests. And so we need to move into a position where SAPS becomes a lot more self-sustainable, which is why we've with the NRCS as well, it's the purchase of generators for the seed lock, and it's also moving SAPS into a more green focus, which is why we've put in a bid to try and get some funds from the fiscus to put solar panels on all of the roofs at the campus. So I think those are interventions that would certainly assist us. Honourable Yaku, thank you for your comments. I think just to position, so internally I think our because we've had this massive cash constraint and we haven't been making any internal or any major appointments, we have, I think it's a target of 47% for this year, and I agree with you, it should be 50%. The 30% target is for the women in the technical committees. And I think this is, I'd also like to ask the portfolio committee to assist in this space, because what we need to do is we need to bring more women into those technical committees to help us refine and redefine standards. You know, we've had standards in the past where, for instance, the safety boots in the mining industry used to be a zipper. Because women are in the mining space and are, we've changed the standard now. It's now a lace-up boot, which accommodates different body shapes and sizes. There's been a number of interventions that we've been able to put in place precisely because we've had more women around the table and in the room. And I think it's, for me, these technical committees are an incredible, incredible tool of transformation. And so I fully agree with you. We've had to start somewhere. This is the first year we've set those targets. And Sadvir is in the room, and I think he takes the point as well, that we really need to up our game. And so we're going on a massive awareness drive. Wherever I am with the colleagues in SABS, when we're talking to customers, we're also saying, how do we get more women into these technical committees, either as an observer or, more importantly, as a participant? And there are processes in terms of nomination that one can follow to get involved in these technical committees. And so... I'm certainly open to you know, any of the portfolio committee members where you have technical constituents or people who are interested to please contact us, and so we can see how we can start changing this discourse. But the 30% target is on the technical committees, not on the organization. I won in the organization. I think this year is about 47%. I agree it's not the 50, but I think we'll, once we start the placement into the new structure and we've been able to finalize that process, we've certainly made that. I think the discussion is that all of our external appointments would be women first until we reach our targets. Arnold Burns Pramashe, thank you very much. I think the way in which standards are developed is and I agree with you in terms of the International Standards Organization, ISO or IEC, setting these standards, and it's important for us as a country to be represented in those bodies, and we are. Dr. Sadvir Bassoon, he sits on the highest ISO decision-making body, which is the ISO Council, and he serves South Africa's interest in that space to make sure that we're at the table in the room when these decisions are being made. So the process of adoptions, and perhaps Sadvir, you can just speak to the standards development process of adopting ISO standards, and also how we develop our homegrown standards. I won't go into that detail, Sadvir. I will leave that to you. And then also just about our role in ARSO and ASFAC, Sadvir, about how we are assisting in driving a continental agenda that is taking our indigenous products, our indigenous knowledge, and aligned to supporting industrialization, first in South Africa and then looking at regional integration and these value chains. So, Chair, with your permission, if I could perhaps ask maybe just Nils, maybe Katima, if you could first come in on the expired permits. Tina, I don't know if there's anything, if you want to come in on any of the other interventions that we put in place in terms of the financial sustainability and the impact that load shedding has had on us. and cost cutting in terms of Honorable Biani's question. If you could maybe tackle that, Tina. So Katima, Tina, Nils, and then Sadhvir. Can I? And then I'm not sure if the, any other colleagues want to come in. But maybe let me hand over to Katima.
Well, thanks, Jody, and thanks, Honorable Chair and members, and for the questions. Yes, the issue of expired permits and certificates is something that we're not proud of. As I said, and ideally, we need to be maintaining the 100% threshold at all times. So the interventions that we are currently employing, that we put in place, it's the periodic engagements, as Jody mentioned, on a weekly basis. But emphasis has been put more on proactive planning of these activities. As manual as the system may be, but that is the approach we have taken. And also coupled with that is robust tracking that is currently taking place on a regular basis, so that we have some sort of an early warning system in the management of these expiries. But this is supported by a cross-functional team within the organization, where all key role players come together on a weekly basis. We have these meetings 7 o'clock in the morning every Monday to make sure that we align on these issues, what lies ahead for the week that is coming, and so on, and also looking at the rear mirror in terms of what is lagging behind. So this is what is helping us at the moment. On the system side, your ISO 9000 management system, we're sitting at 97%. Certificates are not expired. On the payment side, the SAPS mark, we're sitting at 97%, payments not expired. So these numbers were low months back. We are now gaining a lot of traction in that regard. So we hope that in the coming months, we should be able to eradicate these expiries. Thanks, Jody. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, members.
Tina? Thanks, Katima. Tina?
Thank you, Jody. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the question. When it comes to the power disruptions, it does have quite a significant impact on our ability to do business, especially in the laboratory space. A lot of our labs are very dependent on humidity and temperature for their testing. And some of the tests that take place, if there's a slight dip in the temperature, you'd have to redo the test. So it creates a lot of inefficiencies within the organization, time delays in terms of getting the report out to the customer, which does impact revenue in the long term. So what we're looking at is implementing generators in the key areas. So a lot of our campus does have generators, but we're looking at implementing that in areas where we don't currently. I know a particular area is the block that the NRCS occupies as well, and that project is underway and will be completed in the next 2 months. And the long-term solution, as Jody alluded to earlier, is looking at solar power and more energy efficient solutions across the campus, so that we can take ourselves off grid eventually. I think that's the long term plan, so that we're able to operate without these power interruptions, because it does have a significant impact for us. Thank you.
Thanks, Tina. Nils, do you want to come in on the CO2?
Yes, if I would. Honourable Chair, Honourable Thring raised the question about the standard that we had published about carbon or CO2. It's effectively part of a broader carbon capture and sequestration strategy that many countries have attempted. But I'd just like to provide some background and say to yourself and members of the committee that the Honourable Minister of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, Ms. Creasy, has actually tabled the national determined contribution for public consultations. So this NDC is the cornerstone of the Republic of South Africa's commitment to climate change, and it was approved by Cabinet on the 24th of March 2021. So this is all done under the framework of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and these nationally determined contributions must be deposited with a convention every 5 years, and this is part of an update to one that we had deposited on 2015. So the process is really one of public consultation, and then I think the minister will take it back to cabinet, and then that would be deposited at the UNFCCC as South Africa's commitment. So our standard is independent of that process, providing the criteria and guidelines for any enterprise or institution that wanted to engage in saving CO2. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. So note of COVID, the issue around carbon dioxide capture in the standard. I certainly would like to emphasize that it's not about just that standard or the other one, which is 27914 and 27915. It goes beyond the scopes of basically trying to comprehensively quantify and firstly examine the environmental impact of these capturing of carbon dioxide. So there's a wealth of impact studies that have been done, which has now contributed towards the South African climate change response. I think one item in terms of what our commitments are for the years 2025 to 2050 is that South Africa has committed to keep the greenhouse gas emission within the range of 389 metric tons CO2 equivalent thereof. So I think that's the target that South Africa has put forward, and they will seek to achieve that target as part of the various programs and projects within the various government departments, supported by tools provided by technical infrastructure institutions as well. I just want to talk briefly about the African Continental Free Trade Area. It's a great question. It's very strategic for the SABS, and that's why we put together an SABS strategic framework in terms of how we support the implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area. However, fundamental to this, the implementation of the agreement, and Jody pointed out that the agreement has an annex to it, and the annex has, in Article 5, talks about cooperation in standardization. And it really articulates what the cooperation should be. And it's about the party shall, and it's not will engage, etc. They shall. It's mandatory. And it is, there's seven items in there which says you shall develop and promote, adopt, and adaption of international standards. So when we refer to international standards, there's only two recognized international standards bodies, ISO and IEC. There are 154 countries who are members of ISO and IEC, and these countries contribute, influence, participate, and develop these international standards from all perspectives and from all technological, climatic, geographical perspectives, contributing towards development of that international standard. A number of African countries contribute and participate. So ISO has about, as an example, 450 committees. SABS participates in relevant ones, close to about 250 P members, and O members 130. So we actively participate and put in our peculiarities, technological differences, etc., and influence that ISO standard. Once it's published, we then adopt it as a South African national standard. That is our membership obligation, and these standards are all voluntary anyway. So in terms of our influence in the African continent, we take the standards that we have adopted, which obviously it's relevant to South Africa, but now to make sure that we drive the intra-Africa trade from a South African perspective, we submit our national standards towards a harmonization process. And remember, it's 39 and other countries as well, all 55 member countries, only 39 that participates in ARSO. And we submit our standards as a base document for harmonization. And the other countries come forth with other their types of peculiarities that they might encounter in their countries as well. And then we reach an agreement, a consensus development approach towards a particular standard. And that's the process in terms of how we engage and develop a harmonization standard that serves the needs of the African continent. Now, ARSO has published more than 1,200 harmonized standards. Majority of these standards are not standards that are peculiar to, as we say, Western countries or the European standards, etc. These are standards that are literally homegrown, and a fair share of the standards. I would say, and hypothetically, we'll get the stats from from ISO as well, but a fair share, probably 10-15% of their publications are ISO and IEC. They're not allowed to adopt them, but they're allowed to adopt them through a notification process. Suffice to say that as much as we would like to make sure to mature the process of adopting, developing, and ensuring that we have the right solutions and tools to advance industrialization in the continent, we've got to use best practice as well. And we've got to, you know, stick to the rules and guidelines as part of the framework as well. But nothing stops us from developing tailor-made, peculiar standards for the African continent and developing that as either a national standard or an ARS standard, African regional standard, and then taking that standard and submitting it to an international process, to ISO or IEC, and making that an international standard as well. Because the whole idea about international standardization is about allowing for the movement of goods and services and creating access to markets regionally and internationally. So that, I trust, provides some sort of clarity or guidance to the question around the African continental free trade area. The diversity in terms of technological infrastructure, quality infrastructure in all of the countries or national standards bodies in Africa, it's very diverse. You might have a two-person national standards body to a national standards body like the SABS, where we have 800 members providing conformity assessments. So that's how diverse it is. So when we engage around the table around technical issues, etc., we need to accommodate for all these peculiarities, and sometimes it takes a much longer period to reach consensus on the technical issues of these standards than we expect it to be. Chair, I'll stop there for now around the comments on the African Continental Free Trade Area. Thanks.
Safis. Chair, I just wanted to make another input. So thanks for that, Safis. In response to Honourable Yaku's question, what we're also doing is we've launched a Women in Leadership program. We're going to launch it on Friday as part of our Women's Day initiatives at the Bureau, which is aimed at providing women currently in the Bureau with the right skills. One of the things that I've picked up since I've been at SABS is that there hasn't been a dedicated focus on, you know, how do we define a SABS manager, how do we define a SABS leader, what are the kind of building management competencies that we have to be, that must be in place, and then what are some of the leadership competencies that must be in place. And you see this when you're wanting to make acting appointments. The discussions that I've had with Lisa is there has to be a dedicated program and we've got to drive it to ensure that we're providing the women within the Bureau with a tool so that when leadership positions are made available, they have the competencies and can then step into that space. So I think that's also just something that we focused on, and the program has been put in place, and it's I think it would be it's going to be launched on Friday, and it's kick-starting throughout this financial year and well into the next financial year. Chair, I think those are the questions that we've had. I hope that's been a sufficient response. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Over to you.
Well, we will actually move to NRCS as well. And what we will do then, we will actually go back to members after the NRCS comments or response to be able to pick up on follow-up or questions that might be actually not clearly responded to. Thank you very much, NRCS.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I think let me deal with them in order as they came. Honourable Srin, the nature of the audit qualification that NRCS has been facing has nothing to do with governance failures within the organization. It's purely a technical legal issue that will require holistic approach in terms of how we move towards a clean audit. It doesn't only require improvement in internal control environment. You also need to look at the legislation what are the appropriate amendments that can be made to try and address the qualification. You also need to have assistance in place in the form of the modernization project that we have embarked on. It will assist to a larger extent in trying to resolve this qualification. I think the biggest mistake that we have made as an organization is that when the GRAP 23 came into effect, we underestimated the complexity of the compliance with that standard. Organizations like SARS, they have applied for exemption because they would have been audited the same way that we are being audited as the NRCS, and the likelihood is that they would also face a qualification, and because it's purely a complex and a legal technical issue. But we are not complacent as the organization. We haven't given up that there is a way of getting out of this qualification, hence we have put all these various measures. One other thing that you need to also take into account is the fact that even though the qualification is on revenue, it has over time changed in shape and form. It is not the same qualification in all the years. For instance, in the current financial year, we are all only qualified, as the CFO has stated, on one aspect of cutoff, which is an error that occurred. It's the single error that occurred in the sample that we have submitted to the AG. Unfortunately, internal audit was not able to pick up that error as well until it was raised by the AG. But we do have a fully functional internal audit within the organization, and they are supporting the improvement of internal control environment in terms of the audit that they perform. I think it also touches on the issues, the same question that was raised by Honorable Yako. As I've said, Honorable Yako, we don't feel defeated. In fact, if you sit with us and we take you through the interventions that we have put in place since this audit qualification emanated, you will realize that there has been a steady progress in terms of how we have put measures to address the audit qualification. You will see when the AG themselves present the report that they do recognize that we are in the right direction, and the measures that we have developed would probably address the issue of the audit qualification, and we don't aim any lower than that. We like any other normal government organization, we aim for a clean audit. But unfortunately, as I said, this is a technical complex issue that will require a number of interventions coming together to try and resolve this and audit qualification. In terms of the LOA international benchmark, it is always difficult to compare NRCS with any other organization across the world. We are constituted in a unique manner. There is no other organization in the world that you can compare with the NRCS in terms of the broader mandate that we have, in terms of the how we are constituted. So it is more about the regulatory method that each and every country is following, more than whether there is a similarity in the processes. of the LOAs. Each country follow a different regulatory model. Some they follow what they call a self-declaration method. Some they use conformity assessments, bodies like SABS, who does the actual work before the regulator come into the fore and issue the final certificates. Many countries, even in Africa, they follow that that model. So there is, in a nutshell, no entity that we can benchmark with as the NRCS, because we follow a completely different regulatory model as a country. In terms of the ICT modernization, the terms and conditions of use, I think what is important is that the system that we are implementing is a SAGE 300 system, which is commonly used in many other entities as well in government. The other part of the modernization involves the regulatory system, and for that kind of system you are unlikely to find an off-the-shelf kind of a system that you can easily implement. So we will be embarking on a process to develop the system from the start, which will be a system that is fit for purpose, that speak to our specific and unique regulatory model and challenges. But the CIO will come in and explain further on in terms of the terms of use and conditions of use and cost implication of the solutions that we are embarking on. Then, Honorable Mbuyane, the sustainability of the organizational structure that we will be implementing will largely depend on the outcome of the job evaluation that we will be starting with at the end of this month. The essentially job evaluation will be able to assist us in terms of developing a new job profiles, evaluating those job profiles and costing those job profiles, and then come to a picture where we are able to say, in order to implement this new structure, we will require so much resources, financial resources, to be able to implement the org. The new org review. Then it would be premature for us to say whether it is sustainable or not at this stage until that process of job evaluation is concluded. In terms of the process itself, the process has been a very delicate consultative process where the employees have been consulted, all the stakeholders have been consulted throughout the development of the organizational structure. Hence, I am in a position where I can say that it is a collective outcome that came out of a very rigorous consultative process. And for that reason, there are no allegations of any fraud and corruption in how we have developed the new organizational structure. In terms of the cooperation with other entities, we have developed a stakeholder engagement plan which seeks to identify key stakeholders either in government, consumer organization, and even the consumers themselves, as well as the industry role players. And in terms of that, we are able to identify key stakeholders that we need to cooperate and work with, and we have entered into MOUs with many of these strategic entities that we have identified through our stakeholder engagement plan, like your SABS, your Department of Transport, Department of Environmental Affairs, and to mention just a few. So we make sure that once we are able to identify those stakeholders, we cement the relationship, we have continuous engagement with those stakeholders, and agree on the way forward. How have we solved the backlog? I think the backlog affected mainly the electrotechnical department, because as we have said, they account to almost 70% of the workload in terms of the LOAs, and we have started by analysis of what are the challenges within the electrotechnical space, and we came to realization that there is lack of resources and in to respond to the workload that the unit has been receiving. And in response to that, we were able to add additional inspectors to assist with the workload. The second intervention that we have implemented was to implement our policy on the cancellation, 30-day cancellation. Because many of the applications that sit on our system is not because of our inefficiencies, or solely because of our inefficiencies, but it's also because industry takes time to rectify the findings that the evaluators pick up during the evaluation process. Some of these will require the applicant to retest to a specific requirements, and usually it will take for more than a year in certain instances where there is no local testing capacity to get a test report. So with the cancellation policy implementation, we are able to take off all these applications that have been in our system for extended time. Other interventions is obviously improving on our processes, on how we review the applications. We have also developed the risk-based approach, which we started implementing, as early as last year. In the electrotechnical space, where we are able to categorize the applications into a low, medium, and high risk, with the low and medium applications being processed within reduced timelines. I think I have dealt with the question from Honorable Yako. Now, the accessibility of the NRCS services, I think what is key is we have developed lots of interventions to assist us in reaching the consumers and the industries that we regulate. Some of the interventions, and I think especially in the last financial year, we have been so aggressive in our marketing and communication strategy, where we have seen the billboards and being installed at various key locations, and we have also targeted the television media, where we were able to air some of the work that we are doing, targeting especially the SABC for that particular intervention. We also continue to work with the local municipalities, local radios, and local media, medias, and newspapers, and we are also working with other government departments, regulators in our space, where we conduct a massive outreach programs and targeting those remote areas that we would normally be not accessible to our services. But we believe that there is still more that we can do as an organization to market and educate the consumers about the nature of the work that we are doing, so that the consumer may also be active in highlighting issues of non-compliance to us as the regulator, so that we are able to deal with that. I think, Chair, I have responded to all questions, but I will just ask the CFO and the COO and CIO to come in to supplement where I have not adequately dealt with the question. Thank you.
Thanks, CEO, and good morning once again, honorable members. I think the CEO has responded adequately. Just to also mention that I think now with office stability within the CFO and the financial manager position, we can also make great strides in improving the qualification, and the technical part of it still does remain the challenge, but we are trying to work around it. I mean, it has seen as an improvement, although it's a qualification, the area of qualification has been limited and is only now amounting to 4.3 million compared with the previous 253 million in the previous years. So, and yes, the ultimate goal is a clean audit, and we are working towards that. And we will. We hope to see improvements in the next year. Thanks.
Good morning once more, and thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. I think the area that I just want to augment in terms of the CEO's response is on the collaboration with other entities and government departments, and through the partnership specifically with the Department of Energy, together with its public entity, which is the South African National Energy Development Institute, we have seen the successful implementation of the energy efficiency database that I've referred to, and solely because it was, you know, a joint effort in terms of also financing of that database, because we're doing work on behalf of the Department of Energy in terms of, you know, ensuring that there's compliance to energy efficiencies. So I thought it would be important to raise this, because that's one of the reasons in terms of also the turnaround within the operations that Honorable Mbuyane was also asking to say, you know, what were the interventions. Was through these partnerships that we're able to leverage on the resources to bring, you know, ICT into space to improve on the efficiency and effectiveness within the work that we do. Thank you so much.
I'm sure we can actually can round up and then go back to members. Have there any further issues to raise? Are we completely covered in terms of the questions we received first thing? Julie, I'm sure your team has come. cover the areas that you have cited. Okay, I see. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Through you, Chair. Yes, I thought we had responded to all of the issues as well. Thank you, Chair.
Allow me to actually then go back to honourable members. If ever there are any further issues, you know, the big issue on our part will be just to say, in these turnaround strategies, are we on track? And are we comfortable for the issues relating to stability, growth, and development? You know, the question of honourable Trim, just it's a point of saying, what score do you give? It's quite an interesting one, because we want to actually check that level of confidence that we are on track and we actually ensuring that stability, growth, and development is able to actually grow to a point where we can actually see how the turnaround strategy impacting on the kind of program we are engaged in. Honourable members, are there any further questions?
Chairperson, we have Mr. Burns Namashe, Chair.
Okay. Let's know Comrade Burns Namashe. Honourable Burns Namashe.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I think it's two issues which are interrelated that I would raise. First to Ms. Jody. I think as part of her response, which she was sponsoring, I think, to Ms. Yako, she did raise something to the effect that if there are people who would want to get more information, they can come to their offices. Now, Chair, I just want to caution, you know, that kind of approach. I would rather prefer a more proactive than a reactive approach. Remember, if we are to use, for instance, or rather take into account the nature of the geographic location of our people, majority of whom are in rural areas. Let's find a more proactive way to provide them access to information. I mean, it's their constitutional right, Chair, to have access to information. And those who are in public entities, they must take it upon their shoulders to ensure that South Africans, wherever they are fully equipped with information. You know, a nation, Chair, without information and knowledge, that nation is disempowered. If we give people as much information as is possible, it actually equips them to take informed decisions. You know, and with information, if I can just digress, with information, some of the recent state of mayhem and looting and so on, and those things, to a certain degree, would not have happened if our communities are equipped with information to know their rights, to know the implications of their actions, to know to differentiate when they are being misled to doing things that are unlawful, to doing things that at the end of the day will affect their livelihoods. So I
really want to make that special appeal, that rather than being reactive, let's rather be proactive.
Second, I listened quite attentively and carefully when the CEO was responding to the issue of access. Again, that's why I was saying it was interrelated. I'm looking forward, CEO. I've listened when you were mentioning institutions, organs that you have had a relationship as a strategy partners. I'm looking forward to you when you come and report to the committee next time, when you'll be able to say, at least I have visited the National House of Traditional Leaders. I have visited the Provincial House of Traditional Leaders. I have visited, if practically possible, local houses. I have engaged SALGA so as to ensure that all sectors, institutions, organs of civil society, be they at cosmopolitan areas, be they at metropolitan areas, but access to information is a constitutional right. So these are institutions that are there. I'm not talking about institutions that are yet still to be created. They are there. They are at your disposal. It's a question of linking up to those institutions, build a relationship, work closely with them, because these institutions, locally, they command lot of huge geographic space in terms of their areas of jurisdiction. So building partnerships with these institutions, it makes it easy for your work in terms of access to information by those communities under their areas of jurisdiction. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you for the comment, Honourable Member. I'm not sure, Secretary, if ever there's any other member who'd like to raise an issue, question, or point.
No, Chair.
Okay. Can I then just say to our presenters, let's actually ask Scholes and then actually ask the CEOs just on the concluding remarks in rounding up our agenda items today. Let's actually start with Scholes and then come back to CEO NRCS just to get your closing remark, and then we'll ask for the DTIC COO to actually then take closing comments, and then we actually round up today's session. Can I invite Scholes?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Chair, I think the point raised by Honourable Burns-Ravashe is a very important one, and I think we already have a existing relationship that's been institutionalized in the form of MOUs with both SALGA and with CEDA, but I also take the point that he's made to the NRCS about how do we diffuse information and empower communities in a way that that is reachable. And so we take that point, Chair, and we'll explore those existing partnerships that we have and see how we can ramp that up. But I fully support that that point. Chair, I think in terms of the comment that you've made and also Honourable String, in terms of the turnaround strategy, I would say we are on track. My sense, and I think the discussions that I've had with the co-administrator, Dr. Damana, is that we do need to move with a bit more speed and agility in this space. It's a very fine balancing act. We have to empower people within the Bureau to take on the work, and so that's the approach we're taking. So it's not a quick fix. We don't have a silver bullet. It is empowering people with skills, competencies, aside from the technical ones that they have, and we've been getting really solid feedback about the technical skills that SABS has. And so, Jay, I think in terms of growth, we're not yet seeing the numbers turning. So I think the focus has to remain, and we've got to sustain that and ramp that up in terms of revenue generation, revenue protection, certainly. We're doing that. And then also, Chair, I think the point that you've made in terms of stability, I think at SAFS the organization is stabilizing. I think the next 2 months are probably going to be a bit rough in terms of the Section 189 process and concluding that. But I think the manner in which we've engaged with all of our stakeholders is that it's an honest and open conversation. If we don't have the answers, we say we don't know, but let's work collectively on finding a solution. So I think the approach that we've taken in terms of ongoing consultations, talking to everybody, making sure people understand, creating platforms for further engagement, also understanding that we are living in a pandemic, and this creates enormous stress on an emotional and a level for colleagues, well, people, everybody in the country. And so there are also wellness initiatives that we have in place, and people can take advantage of those, and that's been extended to the colleagues and their families at the Bureau. So I think it's a holistic approach, Chair. It's one that is sustained, it is stable, and we now need to also just look at how we ramp up those revenue generation activities. So in terms of the overall score, I said a 7, because I think there's a number of areas that we still need to crack that we haven't quite cracked. But the focus, we've got to keep the focus, Chair, and we've got to maintain the pace and also ramp that up. So I think in conclusion, I think the focus on standards development, I think that's going along well. Same as in the auditing space. I think in the lab space we've indicated there are some areas for improvement, we're noting the work in the facilities. So, Chair, I think overall there is progress. It's and we need to look at how we ramp that up going forward. So, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity, and thank you to all of the honourable members.
Most appreciated. Thank you very much. Can we actually go to the NRCS concluding remarks? CEO?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think let me start by reaffirming the proposal by Honorable Benz Ndlamashe. I was taking notes as you were speaking. I think one of the issues that we need to highlight to the committee is overall the work that we are doing. Because one area that you might not be aware of, Honorable Benson Lamashe, is our role in the implementation of Building Standard Act and the regulations, where we work closely with municipality to ensure that there is uniform application of the Building Standard Act. As I said, I was taking notes as you speak. In the next presentation, we will be able to expatiate more on around the work that we are doing. I think one of the limitations with our presentation, what I've seen is that we have limited our presentation focusing purely to the four main issues that the NRC has been challenged with, forgetting to mention holistic view of all other work and interventions that we are doing in other areas. I think in the next presentation we will be able to highlight the work that we are doing. I think as a way forward, we also believe that we have made a significant progress in terms of the implementation of the turnaround plan. The only issues that will be of focus in the current financial year is to ensure that the entity attain a clean audit or at least get out of the qualification that has been troubling the entity for the past 7 years. I think the other issue that we would be focusing on is to address the issue of compliances with the PFMA, building internal control within the system, especially addressing the irregular expenditures that have been happening due to poor management of contracts, especially especially in facilities. So in a nutshell, Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to update the committee on the interventions that we have implemented, and we come the further suggestion by Honorable Yaku that they would perhaps need a closer working relationship with the entity in helping us to finally and ultimately get out of the audit qualification. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO Edward Mamadise, and speedy recoveries on your side effects. Thank you very much. Can we actually then conclude with the TIC COO on the concluding remark?
Thank you, Chairperson. From the department side, Chair, we note the progress made by the two entities, and we believe that indeed they have put in a lot of effort in implementing the turnaround strategies. Of course, we agree with the sentiment shared by some of the members, I think, in the committee as well, that there's a lot of urgency that needs to go into us resolving some of these matters. We again thank the members for the inputs that they've provided. As I indicated, Chair, we value these inputs. They assist us in resolving some of the issues at hand. We will, I believe, also from the two entities, go back and incorporate some of the comments made by the committee today. Also, Chair, we want to give our assurance to the committee that indeed, the ultimate goal is clean audits, and so we also want to assure the committee that we are in constant engagement and communication with the two entities to provide support in whatever way we can to ensure that they implement the turnaround strategies and also are able to resolve some of the challenges that they are facing. So those engagements continue, Chair. And we're giving that assurance, of course, that the ultimate goal is for us to see clean audits, and we're hoping that we're going to be seeing that quite soon. Thank you, Chair.
Let me go back to the Secretariat in a way, because I think we've come to an end of our program for today, and one would actually really then request just to have a look at our next session, because okay. I think it will be actually an area that we have to look at, Secretariat, before we conclude or the meeting.
Chair, just with regard to our next committee meeting, based on the program we adopted, we meeting on next Tuesday, 31st, we will receive a briefing by DTIC and Edward van der Merwe on the submissions received on the Copyright Amendment Bill and the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. So that means our next meeting is the 31st of August, Chair, Tuesday.
Okay. Honourable members, thank you very much. I'm sure we can actually conclude our session, and I can actually then agree that our meeting is adjourned till the 31st. Where we are going to be able to focus on the remitted bills as part of the program. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.